I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
In their industry, and the transition has not been smooth.
And they're also judging a new generation, right?
Yeah. I mean, but what was great about it is that we were not talking about the refs. So let's not talk about the refs. Danny, what do you think is going to go down, Blazers-Warriors?
Oh, you know, I really want to see Steph and Seth go at it, and you know, it just I'm so looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you for the phone call, Danny. I appreciate it. It's just going to be what a great week for the Curry family. I mean, incredible. That family is like, that's one of those things where you're like, God, can you just spread it around a little bit? This family is perfect. They have everything. Let's go help somebody else out. But that's selfish of me. Steph Curry snapped out of his funk, slumped, dregs, whatever it is. Here in the business, we call it going off. He went off in game six. And that was one of the most enjoyable games, even though the Rockets were one of the teams in it. And the Rockets are, with a bullet, the team I least like watching play. Is James Harden a great player? He's more than great. He's unbelievable. He's probably second best in the NBA at being able to create his shot, and when his team absolutely needs a bucket, he's able to do it. Do we have Pavlovich? Is he coming on? 6:20. Okay, my bad. I'll go back to the Chilton Autobody text line. There have been a number of people texting in, and I want you guys to keep me honest because I almost never read three texts in a row, and I've actually gotten tweets as specific as that. How about this? Last Sunday after my show, I think I was just getting out of the Safeway down here, and I decided, okay, I don't want to drive and check my Twitter. Kids, don't drive and check your Twitter. So I pulled over to the side. And I was checking it out, and there were a bunch of people saying the same thing. And I'm trying to figure out how to present this to you. I don't know if it's going to be good for ball, bad for ball, or not. I'll have to check with the guys behind the screen. But what I want to do right now is explain to you how we're changing good for bad for ball. Good for ball, bad for ball? Did I just butcher saying that? Oh, my God. Slow down. Joe Spadoni's like nodding his head. Yeah, he did it again. Hey, that's not nice. That's for Covey. My God. What's the name of his segment? Puff, Puff, Pass, right? Look at how smiley you are. Oh, my God. 888-957-9570. Here's a question. I love that, too. It makes no sense when people will, like, start their conversation with you. They'll go, question, colon. Okay, how about just ask a question without telling me a question is coming? Just like the ship deck, Sharon. I'm telling you, you shouldn't have put that in my head. I'm going to be saying it nonstop. And whoever just sent, just like the ship deck, from the 480, it literally came in and I said it. Now, I said it because of what he texted us, but that person's like, wow, they're Johnny on the spot. Of course, maybe not as fired up about it because the 7-second delay, but what the hell. The Warriors can beat the Blazers in five without KD or Boogie. There it is. There's my question to you guys. Question. Can the Warriors beat the Blazers in five without KD or Boogie? Yeah, I really think they can. Look, this is not new, guys. I think we all have said this. We've all heard it a million times. This team is not going to be beaten if they're fully engaged. And it doesn't matter who's out. Now, if KD, Steph, and Klay were all out, Draymond would just go for 50, right? No, probably not. That would be a struggle. But if the question is, can the Warriors beat the Blazers in five without KD or Boogie? Yeah, I think they could win it in four easily. I think maybe what we saw at the tail end of the Rockets here, game six is going to have a huge impact on the rest of the playoffs. I really believe that. Because Steph, and it wasn't force, that's the key. Steph didn't force himself upon the offense. They needed him. Now, when his shot's not going down, we all know what a smart guy he is, and we also know that the guy who can create his shot and get white hot is KD. He can create his shot every time. Klay Thompson doesn't really, he's not a kind of guy that goes shot hunting. Everything comes within the offense. But KD's the guy that you just, look, I'm not breaking news here. He's the guy that you just give the ball when you absolutely need a bucket. Well, with KD out, Steph knew they needed him to carry a bigger part of the offensive load. And I think maybe he was forcing things just a little bit in the first half. I think he rushed a couple of shots. Steve Kerr has talked about that. It was about Thompson, though. He was saying Thompson was rushing some of his shots. But game six, like, KD could come back for game one of the Western Conference Final. And I think even just that one full game, that one game without him, I think, well, you know, more than just a game, of course, because the game he got injured in. They would have won the series. We know that. But because Steph got to be the man again, and everybody on the team was kind of reminded of who they are and what they do. Look, they're not the Golden State Kevin Durant. He's a great player. I don't think they're the Golden State's Steph Curry's either. Do I care whose team it is? No, I don't. I care if the team plays good basketball. And I don't think it's going to be difficult to incorporate KD when he comes in. I think Boogie coming back, that will be a little bit more problematic because they've had plenty of time with Durant on the roster now to where they know where he likes the ball. They know everything about him. And while, because DeMarcus was a king at one time, and you've seen a lot of him, you know all about him too, but his game is not just give me the ball and I'll get a bucket. You need to call a play for him. You need to create a play for him. Whereas KD doesn't. That's why Kerr calls him the ultimate luxury. But with Curry being able to step into that lead dog role and not just step into it, but crush it in the fourth quarter of a closeout game, that's who the Warriors are. It could have been, I mean, Klay may have hit the biggest shot in that game. But I think if the Warriors were lacking KD for the rest of the postseason, I still think they'd win it. I'm sure there's some people that think I'm nuts. I'm not nuts. This team is more than just Kevin Durant. I'm not saying the Warriors are better off without KD. I'm just saying that they're not done if KD can't come back. They're going to be fine because they finally, in that one game in Houston where they ended the Rockets season, I think a light bulb went off. Because it just seemed like they were all, did you see how happy they were? Finally, we got to see some joy from the Warriors. Finally, Steve Kerr was asking for joy at the start of the season. He said, we didn't enjoy it enough last year. I would like them to enjoy it more this year. I don't think they enjoyed it more this year. This year's been rocky, to say the least. But game six in Houston, they rediscovered who they are without KD on the floor. And when you get the best player on the planet back on the floor, yeah, it might be 8-0 from here on out. 888-957-9570. Steph and Seth going against each other. It's just going to be fantastic. It's the greatest week ever for the Curry family. And it's going to be a great week for Oracle. I challenged the fan base on 957thegame.com. I'm starting to write for them. And I said, Oracle's got to bring it for game five. And I was not there, but guys at the station who were, they're like, dude, it was back to when it truly was Oracle. And it wasn't just people checking their cell phones and ordering a rosé from the front row seat that cost them $8,000. Is that too detailed for you? Joe Spadoni, I'm going to challenge you to come up with a musical stopper when we come back. I love Joe Sherry. He's the producer saying, break, break, break. All right, we're going to break. 95.7 again.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Wow. Just wow. I challenged you, and Joe Spadoni, you rose to the challenge. I don't know why you picked this particular song, but it did make me laugh because it's corny. And look, we need more aha in our lives, not less. We also need more of Alex Pavlovich. He is the Giants insider for NBC Sports. How you doing today, man? Happy Mother's Day to you, Alex.
You too. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. So what's going on in your world? What's taking up most of your attention?
It's been a dramatic weekend, I guess.
What's that?
It's been a dramatic weekend for these guys.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I expected this season, look like most people, to be somewhat, I don't know, funereal, so to speak. I just thought, okay, it's going to be the end of the run. It's going to be sad because Bruce is not going to go out on top like the winner that he is. But there's, I don't know if maybe it's because Mack Williamson is back and doing some things. I'm really happy for him because it looked like his career may have been ended by a poorly placed bullpen mound. But it's there's a little bit of a buzz there, and I didn't think there would be. How about you?
At the ballpark?
Yeah.
I think, you know, for the most part, I think still when they're coming back every night, it certainly is there. And one thing they've done a good job of is, you give them credit. I mean, they've continued to fight, as they say, and it's unfortunate that they put themselves in a hole every night, and you kind of look around, it's 3-0 almost every single game. But they do a good job, I think, of trying to be competitive. But certainly, there are a lot of games where we see there's just the talent disparity, and that was something we knew coming into the year, and we've seen it on the field, and that's something that's hard to overcome.
Yeah, and everybody was talking before the season started about, oh, is this the last for Mad Bum? Is this the last for Buster Posey? It just seemed like every storyline was negative. And now at least we're getting to see some positivity. Like I said, I mean, the Mack Williamson story is just, it's amazing. If you just take it from, you know, what little we knew of Mack Williamson when he became a Giant to where he is now and where he is now, it's like he's gone through almost everything a baseball player could go through.
Yeah, and I think people, you know, everybody talks about the concussion. I think they underestimate what happened 6 weeks ago. I mean, to be designated right before the start of the season, really lose out to two guys who nobody really knew at the time. And, I mean, he was in San Diego. He was there. And the team's getting ready for opening day, and he knows he's going to be put through waivers. And he also knew very well. I mean, Mack's a smart guy. He understood that it was hard at that point for him to really find a job because teams have set their rosters for the most part. So the fact that he was able to, I mean, he went from San Diego, he went home for a few days in on the East Coast, and the fact that he was able to come back and regroup so quickly and get back up here, I mean, that tells you a lot about how hard he worked. I was surprised. I thought at some point we would see him this year. I think he's talented, and I thought at some point he would put together AAA, but the fact that he did it in April, it was pretty surprising. And, yeah, good story, and hopefully they give him a real opportunity here to try to win that job.
The voice you hear is that of Alex Pavlovich. He is the Giants insider for NBC Sports Bay Area. You can follow him on Twitter, and I suggest you do because it's a great follow, at Pavlovich NBCS. I'll spell the last name for you, Pavlovic, with the NBCS at the end of it. We're talking about Mack Williamson and his concussion issues and how he's just coming back, and it's so great and positive that he's on the field. But then you got Buster Posey. He's dealing with a concussion, and we know that that's not his first. And the fact that he is a Giant and the last guy, I think, to like directly relate concussions to his retirement was Mike Matheny. And I'm sure Buster's spoken to him about it, but frightening when we're talking about concussions. I mean, forget about the Giants and their offense and Buster needing to step up and be more of a power hitter, but we're talking about a dude's coconut has been drilled hard a number of times now, and you can almost see the light, like right after that happened. I don't know if you had the ability to see what they were showing us on TV, and they zoomed in pretty close, and we've both been around sports long enough to identify when a guy's pretty out there, and Buster looked awfully banged up.
Yeah, you know, for me, I think it is a little scary when you're talking about that. And we asked him about that in Denver when he talked to us. And he said he's very aware. I mean, he's talked about this after his first one, that he does have a family. He has young kids. I mean, he wants to have a life after baseball and a normal life after baseball. And he did say he's going to talk to some doctors. He's going to talk to some researchers, which I found interesting. I'm sure he is reading as much as he can about the issue right now, but at the same time, I mean, it's something he loves to do, and I, you know, you and I both know that, like you said, I mean, there's no such thing as a mild one, even though sometimes it will tell you there's a mild one, but I do think that just in talking to him and watching him, it is different than the ones we saw with maybe a Hector Sanchez or Brandon Belt, and again, you don't know what he'll feel like in 2-3 weeks. Hopefully everything's okay this week, but it does seem like these two have been more a case of him saying something's not right. And let me pull myself off the field right away and get normal. And the issues with some of the other guys have been, I think they've taken some time and they've come back and felt something wasn't right, but tried to keep playing through it. So the hope is that this happens, you know, this happened 2 years ago. He was back in 7 days and there was nothing after that. So the hope is that that's the case again and he can get back to being the guy he was. And yeah, like you said, I mean, don't worry about the power numbers, just make sure he's out there. But I think it is something that now with two of them in 3 years that, certainly every time he gets dinged back there, we're going to be talking about it a lot more than we were before.
Yeah, as much as I love Steven Vogt, I don't want to see him on the field all that often.
Well, he's been good for him. But
yeah, no, he has. I mean, that speaks to how good Buster is.
Yeah, and I think you look at the difference defensively, and I mean, Steven's done a good job of coming back, but sir, he is coming off a very serious injury, so the throwing isn't quite there yet. But yeah, I mean, their best situation is having Buster starting and Steven available in the eighth inning when he did a big hit.
Last year, one of the bright spots, Alex, was the performance of Derek Rodriguez and all the attention that came with it. It was justified. I mean, he deserved it. He looked like, here's a guy who belongs. And then you factor in the bloodlines, you're like, oh yeah, this dude definitely belongs. And he pitched great last year down the stretch. Not so much this year. I think his ERA got jacked up over 5. In his last start, is there anything that he or Kurt Young have said that suggests it's just a matter of tweaking something, fixing a mechanic, or are they mystified by it? Because the guy, I mean, going into the year, he was the guy I most wanted to track all year.
Yeah, I asked him the other day when he was sent out, and he said it's nothing mechanical. I mean, it's just for him, it's you know, an issue of just being behind in counts. I mean, he has pretty good stuff, but as a right-hander, if you're throwing 91, 92, and don't really have a wipeout breaking ball. I mean, he has a good four-pitch mix, but it's nothing overwhelming. And if you're behind in counts all the time, it's going to be tough for you. And I think that's what he felt was happening. He thought he was just nibbling a lot. And last year, I mean, you did kind of see that command from him and the aggression from him. I mean, he really went after guys. And I think he just got away from that a little bit this year. And he did say it would be good for him to get away from the pressure for a couple of weeks. It's tough. I mean, when you're a young guy and this team's trying to stay in it and maybe you feel a little bit off that night, it can be a little bit tough. So I do think this is still somebody who should be a big part of their future. And this was a step back, but I mean, he had the right attitude about it and said he'll go down and figure it out with the pressure off and hopefully come back here. And I know it was 1 year last year, and we've seen a lot of guys do that for a year, but I also think the way he did it the entire season and never really took a step back was very encouraging. So I think that's still in there, and hopefully he can find it.
And I hope he finds it soon, because if he doesn't, then he's going to fall back on a superstition and say, I'm going to cut my hair. I'm going to cut all my hair. No, you can't do that, Derek. That hair is too good. It'd be like Brandon Crawford cutting his hair.
It's his hair.
Yeah, they got great hair on that team, no doubt about it. So who is somebody that has been an early surprise for you?
An early surprise. You know, I got nobody talks about him. Well, two surprises. I mean, Trevor got the fact that they got him for cash considerations, and he's done what he's done. But the other guy, Nick Vincent, walked into camp like a week late. And really at that point, it was hard to see the fit because they had so many guys fighting for bullpen jobs, and there were guys that we knew from last year. I mean, Ray Black. There were so many starters fighting for jobs. And Nick was there, and they said pretty early in the process that Nick was going to be on the team. And you look at what he's done in kind of an unfamiliar role for him, and I just think it's pretty incredible. He's thrown 89-90, and he's thrown a fastball and a cutter for the most part that don't have much of a difference in speed. And to do what he's done, the last time I checked, his ERA was right around 2.5, I think. He's just been really good for them and in a pretty important role given some of the games they've had. And he's eaten up a lot of innings. So that's a guy I don't think ever gets talked about. But I just think it's fascinating in today's game where everybody's throwing 98 that you have this guy, a veteran, who couldn't find a job, even though he's had a really good big league career out of the bullpen, comes in here as a minor league signee and wins a job and has gotten off to a really good start, and it deserves a lot of credit because it kind of shows you there's still a way to do it. And Bruce Bochy's compared to Sergio Romo. There's a way to do it if you're not throwing 96, 97.
Yeah, it takes balls to be a pitcher. I mean, when you have a limited repertoire, you need to have like really strong confidence in all of your stuff. And you said that Rodriguez was talking about he was nibbling a bit too much. And, boy, I would have to say that during my career, anyways, about 75% of the times that somebody was asked about their bad outing, it's always, I was nibbling too much. Trust me on that.
Well, sometimes I think, you know, it is an issue for guys. And I think sometimes you look at a guy like Nick and just see him go after guys. And I think Trevor got too. I mean, he had some issues in Washington, but they brought him here and just said, look, it's a really good fastball. It's 95, 96. It's a little bit deceptive. And he just throws it a ton. So sometimes you just have to go out there and go for it. And we saw that from Derek last year. I mean, they always talk about conviction. And I just felt like you saw that last year. You could see it on the mound and see it as he went after guys. And that was missing a little bit this year. And that's something he's going to try to find.
I want to talk relievers and trades with you real quick. The run on talent in the offseason was like at the winter meetings. It seemed like the only guys that signed deals at the winter meetings or shortly before or after were relievers. Because as we've seen, the average number of innings for each starter, that's gone down, which obviously means the bullpen usage goes up. And people are now starting to, you know, you hear it all the time. And when you hear it, a lot of times it just comes off as cliches like, well, the ninth inning isn't always the inning where you get the save. There's high leverage situations all throughout a ball game. And I think that's part of the reason, you know, the whole opener's idea, there's relievers are more valued more than anything, more than any other time in baseball. I mean, the relievers are basically the stars of the team. If you can have two or three guys in a bullpen and shorten that game to five innings, which is asking very little of your starter, then you're off to the races. With that said, will those types of players be that valued at the trade deadline? Like if they decided to send Bum somewhere, what if they wanted to hang on to all these bullpen guys because that's the way the game is going? But then who knows? Maybe he's just having his one good year and he's not going to be good next year. That's got to be a difficult decision to make because I would think he'd be able to unload any reliever who's having a decent season at the break.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's something I don't really have the answer to, and I'm kind of fascinated like you just to see what happens because, you know, historically, if you have a guy like Will Smith, who's a left-handed closer right now, you could go to anybody at the deadline and say he doesn't have to be your closer. I mean, this is your lefty guy in the eighth, but he's really good. And Tony Watson, a lefty specialist, you should be able to go to any contender in July and get a nice package for him. And some of the other guys they have there, I even look at a guy like Reyes Maranta. I mean, historically, if you're willing to give somebody a player who's that good and has, you know, 5 years of control, you should be able to get back a really good young outfielder potentially. But I do think what we saw in the offseason was teams, you know, at times, teams felt like they could go out and get these guys, but I also, again, go back to a guy like Vincent who has had success and just had no luck on the market. And there are a lot of other guys. I mean, you look at what's happening with Kimbrel.
That's crazy.
So I'm curious if we will actually see. I mean, I know that should be the easiest way for these guys to kind of regroup and build their farm system a little bit is to really go through that bullpen and trade a lot of these guys, especially the ones who are coming up on the end of their contracts. And that's what people have always done. But I don't know, given what we've seen the last couple of years, and the shift happened so quickly that I don't know what we'll see in terms of value. I mean, like you said, teams are using bullpens a lot more, so maybe you will find – you will find these guys. But at the same time, I think a lot of teams do have the same feeling of what you said, that, yeah, you should get rid of that guy because it's 1 year. So it might be a market where you see every team that's not competing just makes four or five guys available, and that makes it tough if you're trying to sell.
The voice you hear is that of Alex Pavlovich. He covers the Giants for NBC Sports Bay Area. Follow him on Twitter at Pavlovich, NBCS. When Sam Dyson came aboard, he pitched really well when he first came over, but he's been kind of an up-and-down guy. He's been either really good or, you know, there hasn't been a whole lot of middle ground with him. You think he'll, if he just, right now, he's I think he's working at a three, very low threes for his ERA, and while ERA isn't the end-all, be-all for relievers, it's what they have to judge relievers by. Do you think Sam Dyson is valued out there?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the kind of guy I think is interesting because, he should be. He's a guy who goes out there and takes the ball every single day. I mean, he has pitched a ton the last few years.
And multiple roles, too.
Slowing down. Yeah, I mean, he's really not a closer, and I think we've seen that, and that was the issue he had last year when they put him in that role. But he can come in for you in the fifth inning. If you have a deep bullpen and you need a guy who can come in when you really need a ground ball, I mean, that's your guy. And he should be, and he can pitch in the seventh and the eighth. He has pitched in the ninth before. So that, again, is one of those guys that you think would have a lot of value. But I just don't know where we're going to be in 2 months. I don't know what – I think you just see what happened in the market. And there were deals like the Joe Kelly deal and things like that. But, again, I go back to a Kimbrel. I mean, I think a lot of teams feel like they can develop their own and don't necessarily want to pay. So at some point it might come down to just taking any sort of prospect. Just to trade guys, but it will be interesting to see because of all the shifts we've seen the last couple of years. When the trade deadline comes around this year, how those guys are valued.
Yet another guy with concussion issues in his very near past, Joe Panik. And look, we never, as you mentioned earlier, you have to take concussions seriously. I mean, they will end careers if they're not dealt with properly. It must be tough for Joe Panik, though. Because, I mean, he looked, let's go back to opening day, he looked like, okay, he's over it. He's back to being Joe Panik. But I heard people on a national radio show talking about, you know, who might be dealt. And somebody, his name got brought up only as kind of like a throwaway. Well, we'll just give him Joe Panik. It's like he had sunk that far. When he was a rookie, he was like, oh, my God, we've got our second baseman for the next 15 years. Is his inconsistency a product of just not being able to be out on the diamond on a regular basis?
I think a little bit, but at the same time, he's been healthy this whole year and dealt with the same thing. So he's been much better the last couple of weeks and really has taken to that leadoff role and has done a good job for him. I think defensively, he's much better than he was the last couple of years. Really looks like the guy we saw 3-4 years ago. But at the plate, this has become a singular game sometimes. And guys like that who don't really hit for power, I mean, the skill he has is not striking out and putting the ball in play. And you hit into so many shifts now that's not as valuable as it used to be. So it is tough. I think his value is way down. I mean, we saw that in the offseason. We did have – I wrote about it. I mean, there was a chance that maybe they could non-tender him. So I think his value has dropped a lot over the last couple of years, but – he is somebody who I talked to this week, and he said it sucks when you get off to a slow start because you look up there and you're hitting 180 or 190 or whatever. But he did feel like he had figured some things out and this would come around. And the average really, I think it increased 29 points on the last trip alone. So he's gotten much better the last couple of weeks. And if he keeps that up, then, yeah, I think people start to look at him a little bit more like the guy we used to know.
Yeah, he looked like he was going to be, one of the – more rounded second baseman in Giants history. And he also looked like Buster Posey. I used to get freaked out when I'd see them walking down those stairs on the way to the diamond. They'd be next to each other. I'm like, wow, that is so big brother, little brother right there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say he really had that early on in his career.
He's got the rosy cheeks, much like Buster had before he became the grizzled old veteran. Talk to me about Boach. How's he holding up?
He's doing well. I think he's realistic, and that's what he had to be coming into the season. And he had to, he understands where they've been the last couple of years and that there weren't really huge changes. So I think he understood. The one thing, the bummer about this season, when he and so much of our talk, even going back to the offseason is about trade options and Bumgarner and what you might be able to get for him. And like we just talked about the bullpen, this is a guy who wants to compete. He wants to go out there in September and be competing. He wants to be playing in October. And it does really seem like where they are that pretty soon the best option is going to be to start putting these guys on the market. And I think that's a bummer just when you look at the manager who his last couple months might really be with a bunch of younger guys out there and really with a bunch of guys who are just kind of getting an audition. And so that's tough, but I think he also understood at the beginning of the year what this was going to be like, and that's probably made it a little bit easier.
Yeah, I hope, like you do, Alex, the guy is such a great guy. And not just, I mean, he's a Hall of Fame manager. We know that. His credentials speak for themselves, but talk about just a cool dude, man. When I was covering the Giants when I had your job, Alex, that was one of my favorite things to do. That was one of the highlights of my day is being able to sit down in the dugout and Boach would, you know, he does the TV media, he does the general media, but where I most enjoyed dealing with Bruce was when you kind of break him off and get, hey, Skip, can I talk to you just for a couple of minutes? And you lie to him, you tell him that you're working on something that nobody else knows about. But bottom line is I just wanted to soak up as much time with Bruce Bochy as I could. A large part of that, obviously, is his baseball acumen, but just a really good dude with a really good heart, and that's why he's lasted so long.
Yeah, you know, an example for me, I have a lot of those moments too, but I think it's been fun this year, and he's gotten a lot of goofy questions already this year.
I'll bet.
Really, it is something I always think, people don't really care about the media, but I think the way he handles it has been phenomenal. And I mean, the other day somebody asked him if he would let Pablo pitch on Let Pablo Pitch bobblehead day. And, and you know, a lot of managers might snap at that and end the interview, but he had a good time with it. So for me, he's done that the whole year and has kind of had a lighthearted approach to all this. And that's been good to see.
It's funny you mentioned Pablo pitching. I had to write it down to remind myself to ask you about Pablo pitching. Man, it seems like he has a good time with that. I've always loved Pablo just because he plays with his emotions on his sleeve, and he is just it seems like he's always happy. He always has high energy. He's a joyous Major League Baseball player, and those are in short supply these days.
Yeah, I mean, he just wants to play. It's simple. He just wants to play baseball. And so whether it's pitching him, whether it's second base, being the emergency catcher, and it's just a love for the game that I think is fun to see. And what he's done the last couple of years and ingratiating himself again with his fan base is really cool. And, he's pretty good on the mound too. And the one thing I always noticed when I watch him, and I wish a lot of pitchers would kind of take this from him is just the pace. He goes out there and just goes right at guys.
Yep.
And, you know, it's with 84 and it's 70 mile per hour curveball. And yeah, if you had to do that every day, it'd be a little bit different. But there are so many guys who stand out there for 45 seconds and then throw a ball and do it again. And I think Pablo just kind of keeps guys off balance and keeps his infielders behind him happy. And it's because he's a position player, but I noticed that last year against the Dodgers, he did it again against the Reds the other day. Just the pace he brings out there and how he's having fun. You know, Cueto does that a little bit, and I wish more guys would do that.
Yeah, Miguel Tejada, when I was covering him with the A's, he's the same way. It's just he was having the best time, whether he goes 0-for-4 or 4-for-4. He was the same appreciative dude. Like, I am in America, I am playing baseball, and they're paying me ungodly amounts of money. This is awesome. That's what Miggy represented to me. And not that the money is a big deal, but that's kind of what it's about for me and Pablo, too.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly got that contract, he's set for life, but he could have disappeared after that. He didn't have to come back and try to he didn't have to come back here where he burned a lot of bridges and he did. And to me it's really cool what's happened, and as much as what I just said about Bochy at the end of the year, that will be a little bit of a bummer. It'd be nice if Pablo's there with him, because those two are very close, and they were all very open last year about how they'd like to have him play 9 positions in one game, and I think we would see that this year. Maybe see him pitch a little bit more. So it could be something that is a rare highlight down the stretch.
Yeah, I think they might be surprised themselves. I mean, obviously you don't expect Pablo Sandoval to all of a sudden jump into the bullpen that you just traded all your Sam Dysons from, but it's just a fun little sidelight for the Giants. Alex, I've run out of time. You're always so gracious with yours, man. I really appreciate it, especially on Mother's Day Sunday. Happy Mother's Day to you, Alex.
Thank you. To you, too, and your family.
All right. Thank you, brother. That's right, Alex Pavlovich of NBC Sports Bay Area. He's a good one. I've gotten to see him basically grow up in the media. He, much like me, started out as a writer, and then look how good he is on the radio. He's on TV. He's doing it right, man. It's a labor of love. It's very difficult to get to a point where you can actually make a living in this business. And because Alex is so good, he's doing just that. All right. We're out of guests, but this is where I explain to you how you are going to be the guest during Good for Ball, Bad for Ball. But first, I need to talk to my guys behind the glass and make sure they're okay with it, too, because it's not my show. It's our show. On 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Just like the ship deck, Sharon. That little pause, that was me trying to get the beats lined up, and I was going to rap it to you. And then I just, it's best that you don't hear what I heard in my head. It was just not good. I'm Michael Urban, 647. Happy Mother's Day to y'all. We'll be with you until 8 o'clock. Who wants to eat dinner with the family? Herbs is on the radio. You can do them both. Feel free. By the way, quick public service announcement. 95.7. TheGame.com. I'm sorry, it's actually, there's no point. 957TheGame.com. When we switched over, it wasn't even really a switch. It's, I don't even understand how it all works, but the end of our legal ID used to just be, you know, the home of the Golden State Warriors. And now the tagline is a radio.com sports station. And so I've talked to some people that are just fans of the station, like where I live in Livermore. They'll say, dude, how come I can't get the games anymore? I'm like, you can get the games. Yeah, but I got to sign up for an app and all that. I don't need to. It's like, dude, you hit like two buttons, seriously, and you'll get right to it. But the reason I bring it up is because I want to make sure everyone knows the website did not go away. In fact, the website is much better than ever. Carl Buschek and his team, it's fantastic. Every day you go there, you will get proprietary content. They bust ass. They do video. The podcasts can all be found there. Like you could find podcasts from way long ago because we archive it. That's among the things that these talented gentlemen behind the glass are tasked with. Wow. I got to agree with this one. 707. Wow. What a shot by Leonard. And then 408, 1 second later, says, what y'all think about Kawhi? If you didn't see it, you've got to see it as soon as you can. Kawhi Leonard, in his first year with the Raptors, has Toronto fans actually believing they can win the NBA title. Now, you say, well, what about with DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry? Last year, they had the best record in all of basketball. So you're saying they weren't confident about winning the title then? No, they weren't, because they knew DeMarcus DeRozan. DeMarcus? Wrong guy. DeRozan, he is defrozen in the postseason. He single-handedly is the reason they never did anything with all of that talent. Well, Kawhi Leonard comes, and boom. A lot of people are picking them. If any team's going to knock off the Warriors, a lot of people think it's going to be Toronto. And they think that because Kawhi Leonard is, I'm telling you, they got over in that trade. Let's hear the sound of the way he just ended game seven against, I'm getting my teams messed up. The Celtics have already been bounced. The 76ers. So
it's off to Leonard, defended by Simmons. Is this the dagger?
Toronto has won! That is good stuff right there. I want to play it again because where the – look, you know it's magic when the announcers lose their minds. And listen to the pause right before they really go off. You got to see this visually too. It hit the back rim. I think it was the back rim. Ball bounced up higher than the top of the backboard. And, you know, it's like time froze. That must have been like 10 minutes to the guys on the floor. And it drops in to end game seven. That's why we love sports. It was amazing. Let's play the sound one more time.
It's off to Leonard, defended by Simmons. Is this the dagger?
You can hear the bounces. I got to play it again. Hold on.
It's off to Leonard, defended by Simmons. Is this the dagger?
Wow. I trust you guys know what I'm talking about when I say you can hear it. Yeah, and all the Toronto executives are looking at each other going, yeah, good trade. And the executives with the Spurs are going, seriously, dude, I wasn't at work that day. Did you sign off on that too? Kawhi Leonard, he is a difference maker. I look at the Toronto Argonauts. No, they're not the Argonauts. I just like to flash my CFL knowledge every once in a while. The Raptors were never to be taken serious, at least not in my mind. They are a great regular season team, and they had a lot of great talent, but they were never going to get anywhere with DeRozan leading the charge. And he wasn't, you know, most teams, if you've got, say you got two superstars, they're kind of on the same level, right? Not so in Toronto. It was always, DeRozan was the number one, and Lowry was the number two. Now, Lowry doesn't have a very good track record in the postseason either, but DeMar DeRozan was just awful in the postseason, and that's why Toronto never went anywhere. But Kawhi is a winner. He's a winner. Kawhi is somebody that you can give the ball to. He'll get a good shot off at the end of the shot clock, end of the quarter, or the end of game seven. I mean, the Eastern Conference semifinals have been amazing. And I love it because it's truly the top four teams in the Eastern Conference. They all made it there. So many times we look at something before the season starts or after you get to the halfway point, which is really when you start thinking about the playoffs. So you start thinking about playoff matchups. And I now fear the Raptors. I think they could beat the Warriors if the Warriors aren't great, if they're not engaged. Now, if they are, if the Warriors come with the type of passion and just passion, period. They don't play with passion all the time, the Warriors I'm talking about. And they don't need to. But the Raptors never seem to play with any passion at all. And Kyle Lowry, just, I'm sorry, he was kind of framed as the Robin to DeMar's Batman. I don't even think Kyle Lowry is a Robin. I think he's a really, really good player, obviously. I'll even give you he's a great player. But he's not somebody that you can just hit your wagon to and say, take us where we need to go, big fella. First off, he's not a big fella. But it just seemed like that team collectively stymied themselves. I don't think they ever believed in themselves. But when you add a talent like Kawhi Leonard, who is a guy who can get his shot whenever he wants, he plays hellacious defense, and he's actually a decent passer. I mean, this guy is, like, to use a baseball phrase, he's a five-tool player. And so you get a guy like that who is far and away, clearly, the number one guy on your team, it's a lot easier to handle the locker room when you don't have two guys who think they should be the guy. Now, neither of those guys came out and said it, but I got one friend who covers the Spurs. I have another friend who covers the Raptors. And they both have dealt with both of those guys a number of times. And it's like, there's such a huge difference here. And I'm talking about with Kawhi in the mix and Lowry, and they both said, but that's a good thing for the team because now Lowry kind of knows his own lane because he probably thought he was a better player than DeMar DeRozan in the first place. But he wasn't. He was the number two for a reason. And now he's not a number two, Kyle Lowry, that is. I would say he's the number, what would you say, three, four on the Raptors? Joe Spadoni, you got thoughts on that? Who's the second best player on the Raptors? Do you think it's Kyle Lowry?
I would probably say Danny Green.
I like that. In fact, I agree with that, and I will see your Danny Green, and I will raise you a Marc Gasol.
Yeah. I will say with Danny Green, he does have the championship pedigree.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's the only reason I'm going with Danny Green.
Oh, he's a really versatile player. Joe Sherry, what do you got? Going Siakam?
I'd say, yeah, most improved player in the NBA this year. Pascal Siakam is up there for me.
Yeah, he's absolutely the most improved player. I'm surprised they have that award in pro sports because that was the award when I was in high school that if you got the most improved award, it was, man, you sucked at the start of the year and you're passable now.
Have you ever heard of most inspirational player award?
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing.
I got that one, so.
Yeah, a good friend of mine, he was my best friend at the time, Ed Bass. Shout out, Ed. He was the me of their school. Bad basketball program. Somebody has to score the points. I'm not saying when we were great, but we scored a lot of points. But it was for a bad team, and we weren't very good. And he got most inspirational, and I got most improved. And we looked at each other like, this trophy is not going up on my – it's not going to be anywhere in my room. In fact, I'm kind of proud of this. I taught my daughters – to hide the trophies that you didn't. First off, the participation trophies, are you kidding me? I wouldn't even let them in the house. Like, those are, oh, I have a very, it's very crude. It's very profane. I don't think I could say it on the radio, but my daughters actually have heard me talk about that. But they now value those types of things. Long story short, he convinced me to not play baseball my junior year, so that he and I, again, we went to different schools, so that we could play basketball every single day and put that most improved and most inspirational. I mean, that's just like that's a pat on the head, right? You're just patting him on the head. Yeah, you improved. You're inspirational. What does inspirational mean? Who would be the most inspirational player? You can't pick Draymond Green. Who would win most inspirational player on the Warriors? Would it be Sean Livingston? Joe Sherry, I want your thoughts on this one.
If you can't pick Draymond Green?
You can't pick Draymond because that's everybody knows he's the most inspirational.
Hmm. I'd have to say Kevon Looney is my pick right now for the way he's been playing.
Not a bad pick. That's a great pick, actually. Yeah. Attaboy, way to contribute. Hey. Joe Sherry coming strong. By the way, Joe Sherry's good for ball, bad for ball is it's going to be a big part of your weekend because it's probably only going to last about, I don't know, half hour max. But you will basically all day tomorrow walking around going, damn, that Joe Sherry, he really made my Sunday pop. Thanks for Mother's Day. Here's the change that we're making. But first, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM, and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. So here's the tweak we're going to make to good for ball, bad for ball. And we'll find out whether or not you guys can truly bring it. We also might find out that I'm the king of horrible ideas and we go down in flames and we say, okay, let's go back to the old way. Usually, it's the producer, excuse me, the producer comes up with the topics, has the topics, reads the topics to us being me and my non-existent host. And that's just how it works. We deal with it. We deal with the topic. He gives us the topic. What I would like to do, and do it like my good friend Uncle Towny would do it, he gets the audience involved early. He says, you guys need to line up. And now I'm saying it. So let's take Towny out of it. I want you guys to line up. I'll give you the high sign because it's not going to be for a while. But when I tell you that it's time for good for ball, bad for ball, as soon as I say that, you guys got to start calling in. tell them you're ready to play the game, and they will put you on hold. And when the game starts, I promise I won't do too far in advance of it because, again, we need to find out if that rock flies. So I'm going to say go now, and you call. Joe is taking the phone calls, so we're going to line you up, and we'll have, let's say, 8 lines max. And when somebody drops off, we'll add someone to it. But you are the star of Good for Ball, Bad for Ball because I am going to read the topics to you. And we'll see. Look, I'll bet you we get a bunch of different answers. Like, for every question, this would be the ideal.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.